This is Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and places, in fact, to the very streets of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Wilshire Boulevard slices 16 miles west from downtown Los Angeles, past MacArthur Park and the old Gaylord Apartments, named for the man who built this street. You can check out the old Art Deco classics, Bullock's Department Store, and the Wiltern Theater, and continue on across two more cities, three area codes, and 206 cross streets, until you see the sun setting out over the Pacific. There are older streets, longer streets, and streets more beautiful, but no single street tells a story that better defines the city we live in.
I think you could argue that Wilshire Boulevard is the most important boulevard in Los Angeles, and one that has not just some baggage, but it has some meaning behind it.
Kevin Roderick wrote the book on Wilshire, literally. Wilshire Boulevard, Grand Concourse of Los Angeles, tells the story of the street and the man. How it started as a 400-yard promenade for rich people and evolved with the arrival of automobiles and more entrepreneurial minds into a linear downtown that changed the city forever. Today on Greater LA, we continue our series on LA street names, and reporter Mike Schlitt takes a ride along Wilshire Boulevard.
I want to tell you a story about a guy with a fertile mind and a whole lot of cash. He created a street that would mirror our city's metamorphosis from Hicktown to Boomtown to the global megalopolis it is today. But in the end, the city grew in ways not even he could have imagined, until there was no room left for him at all. Actually, when I started working on this project, I had no idea how Wilshire Boulevard got its name. Let's ask Kevin Roderick.
Wilshire Boulevard is named for Henry Gaylord Wilshire. He came to Southern California in the 1880s and started spending his daddy's money to buy up land because that's what everybody was doing.
At the time, LA was just a small town. Then the railroads came and everything changed. LA became a magnet for men with big ideas and deep pockets. Men like Gaylord Wilshire. He was a son of wealth from Cincinnati, Ohio. His father was a self-made millionaire who dabbled in oil, railroads, and banking. Gaylord and his brother William arrived in L.A., enamored of its wide open spaces, untamed, unspoiled, the sun always shining. Seemed almost impossible not to get rich buying land here.
Gaylord Wilshire and his brother William decide they're going to subdivide this barley field that they had bought on the western edge of Los Angeles.
It was about the size of 26 football fields, smack dab in the middle of nowhere. 2 miles west of what's now downtown, near the intersection that would become Alvarado and Wilshire.
There was nothing out there. It was just wide open fields of grass and foxtails and mustard. It was kind of a garbage dump area.
The Wilshire brothers paid $52,000, something like $1.5 million today. That was more than investors were paying for land almost anywhere else in L.A. at the time. People thought they were chumps.
And around that time, he also was getting into trouble with the authorities for his socialist views and for doing things like orating in Pershing Square without a permit.
The labor of 100 people will produce much more than 100.
That's right, socialist views. The would-be land developer was also a leading progressive political voice in the city. The founding member of the LA Country Club juggled his time between advocating for the proletariat and working out the kinks in his backswing.
This led to Gaylord Wilshire acquiring a nickname, and in both in socialist circles and in the newspapers, he was known as the Millionaire Socialist.
The Millionaire Socialist was a failure at real estate. But then, something kind of amazing happened. Piece of land right next to that track he had bought got converted from a city dump into a city park. And it was not just any city park.
That was the most beautiful park in the city by some people's estimations in those days. We know it today as MacArthur Park.
Angelenos fell in love, strolling the promenade in their Sunday best bustles and morning coats, enjoying a sunset sail on the lake, kids flocking to refreshment kiosks serving fresh milk, and a Sunday concert crowd of 10,000. In less than a decade, Gaylord Wilshire went from looking like a chump to looking like a genius. And then he decided to cash in.
They laid out a tract of 8 blocks moving west from MacArthur Park. They laid out the main boulevard and 4 cross streets and started building homes. They laid out this boulevard to be very grand, very wide.
A veritable Champs-Élysées of the Pacific, with modern concrete sidewalks and curbs, palm trees imported all the way from Colorado. And if you open up the December 10th, 1895 edition of the LA Times, near the top of page 6, you would find this ad.
The most magnificent property ever offered for sale in Los Angeles. The Wilshire Boulevard Tract.
Of course, he decided to name the street after himself. There were no cars in L.A. in those days. Wilshire Boulevard was laid out for horse traffic. Trolley lines ran on either side of it along 6th and 7th Streets, connecting it with the rest of the city. And Gaylord Wilshire was adamant about one thing. He wanted no trains of any kind on Wilshire Boulevard itself. Just row after row of expensive residential homes.
His vision for the boulevard, I don't think, went much beyond this idea that I'm going to create a neighborhood for the powerful of Los Angeles, and that he did.
The most powerful man in Los Angeles at the time was General Harrison Gray Otis, the first owner and publisher of the LA Times, and Wilshire's arch nemesis.
H. Gaylord Wilshire, a flamboyant self-promoter whose father left him a fortune and nothing else.
That is actual copy from an LA Times editorial. So is this.
Golfist, socialist, billboardist.
Billboardist, in case you're wondering, is a reference to Wilshire's lucrative side gig. I mean, the guy wasn't just a renegade speculator and millionaire socialist.
At the time that he first laid out the boulevard, he was more known for being the billboard king of Los Angeles. He was the guy who was putting up ugly billboards all over the city and being castigated in the newspapers for the unattractiveness of what he was spreading around the city, and he didn't care about this.
Wilshire put his billboards up all along the 6th and 7th Street trolley lines, but not a single one on Wilshire Boulevard itself. General Otis was livid. In the waning days of 19th century Los Angeles, it is hard to imagine two men who despised each other more.
And Harrison Gray Otis then goes and buys a house in Gaylord Wilshire's tract.
As soon as Harrison Gray Otis called Wilshire Boulevard home, of course, everyone else had to live there too.
That became a very prominent address in upper crust Los Angeles.
The Wilshire Tracts were now the hottest hood in town. Wilshire Boulevard was becoming a Fifth Avenue of the West. And Gaylord Wilshire?
His personal interests were already starting to waver in other directions at the time, and he leaves town.
Wilshire moved to London, decided to try his hand at politics, and he actually ran for Parliament.
He ran for office in 3 countries and in 2 states, and never won. Never won an election for anything. But he certainly enjoyed running.
While living in London, Gaylord Wilshire blew through not one, but 2 inherited fortunes. In 1914, war was breaking out in Europe, and Gaylord Wilshire was broke. He decided to come back to L.A.
He had to be shocked by what had ensued while he was gone. A lot of things about the city were changing. It was now a full-on boom town, and it was very much automobile-driven. People were flooding out of downtown and moving to the west, buying houses in these new communities, Culver City, Beverly Hills. This was all happening because of Wilshire Boulevard.
But not because of Gaylord Wilshire.
He talked about himself as the creator of this massive miracle in Los Angeles, the Wilshire Boulevard. He would send letters to people trying to offer his services as someone who could help in this growth boom. Not many people wanted his help.
In the 1920s, L.A. experienced another massive land boom.
It grew from 570,000 people to 1.2 million. That's like Fresno turning into Dallas.
Every third person in Los Angeles drove a car, and Wilshire and Vermont had become the busiest automobile intersection in the country. L.A. got bigger, Gaylord Wilshire got smaller.
he was a 19th century guy trying to make this transition into the, you know, the roaring 20s in Los Angeles and not being invited to participate in the land game. So he gets back into the invention game and he starts marketing something of his own invention called the Ionico Belt.
He claimed it could cure cancer, diabetes, constipation.
Ionico has stopped my hair from falling out and has now rethatched my bald spot.
In his final years, Wilshire put everything he had into marketing his miracle belt. And while he did have some success, it came at a heavy cost. He was 66, deeply in debt, and most of his friends had abandoned him for good.
He died in New York City in, I think, in 1927, just ahead of what was going to be a major crackdown on the Ionico Belt.
The LA Times devoted just one short column to his passing with a headline that read,
Wilshire dies in New York.
That's it. That's all it said. General Otis had died a few years earlier, but he still got the last laugh. And Gaylord Wilshire died in exile.
Today, Gaylord Wilshire is mostly forgotten, but the street named after him is still right in the thick of things. So what will the next iteration of Wilshire look like in the 21st century?
Some of the busiest bus routes are on Wilshire Boulevard. And underneath is the subway line that's going to become a major transportation corridor. But if you get to 2050, isn't it possible that Wilshire Boulevard, again, some of the intersections will be the busiest transit stations perhaps in the country?
And I think that's the way Gaylord Wilshire would have wanted it.
Was he really visionary? Because he said, you know what? Never build any train lines on my boulevard.
It goes full circle.
Yeah.
For KCRW on Wilshire Boulevard, I'm Mike Schlitt.
By the way, today's story featured Keith Farley as Gaylord Wilshire and V.J. Foster as General Otis. We'll be visiting more L.A. streets with Mike Schlitt soon. Next up, Hollywood Boulevard. Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's not easy getting a show at an art gallery, certainly an art museum. So as difficult as that's always been, consider the fact that physical galleries and museums have been shut down now for more than a year. And now, with many of them reopening, there's a backlog to tend to. So rather than wait for a Gagosian or a Hauser & Wirth to offer up their walls and floor space, some LA artists are putting on their own shows. And they're doing it with a focus on the community in these supercharged times. Lindsay Preston Zappas is founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles, or Carla. And after taking a look, she's here to talk about a couple of those artist shows. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
Does an artist-run show, by the way, differ from an exhibition that you would typically see at a gallery or even a museum?
You know, sometimes more than others, but I would say in general, an artist-run exhibition is going to be more focused on the art, like more focused on artists, more focused on community. And there's less of that drive for the sale as the main focus. And that's a really palpable difference.
Well, let's start with a show that you saw earlier this month. This is at a gallery called So and Taylor that just opened south of downtown. It's run by artist Greg Ito, who we've actually talked about on the show before. Remind us who he is and tell us a little bit about this exhibition there.
Yeah, so Greg Ito is a local artist. He's a painter and also makes these really cool installations that he kind of exhibits his work within. We talked about him last summer when he was setting up these sign-making stations at protests around LA, which was a really cool endeavor. So now him and his wife, Karen Galloway, have started this new gallery space also with Stefano DiPaolo, who Greg told me they really consider him as kind of part of their extended family. Karen and Greg also just had a baby. And so they're really thinking about this gallery as like a family project with their newborn daughter and kind of setting this up. Greg also explained to me that the name So and Taylor is kind of an extension of that. So is actually spelled S-O-W.
We changed sewing for S-O-W as in sowing seeds. you know, growing these relationships and tailoring art shows and projects that bring people together, you know, because it's important to have that space for our creative community to have those exchanges.
So the exhibition is this group show. It's called Hot Concrete LA Arrangement. And it includes, you know, a lot of really familiar names like Peter Shire, Sayre Gomez, some that have recently been in the Made in LA exhibition, like Mario Ayala. But also, I was really pleased to see some new artists that I was not familiar with, like a painter named Tito Whitney Leck, who had some really interesting work in the exhibition.
Hot Concrete, you mentioned, which I'm envisioning like the city, right? Like
yeah,
the streets of the city and a lot of buildings and a lot of things going on, industrial things. What do you see when you're there?
Yes. So you walk into the show off Grand Avenue, and the work clustered at the front of the exhibition really sort of mimics the streets of LA. You see pieces that are actually, you know, referencing spaces in K-Town, for instance, or Peter Shire's maquette for his public sculpture that's installed in Elysian Park. So you kind of bring the streets into the gallery. And I think they were thinking a lot about public versus private space, which, of course, has taken on a whole new resonance in the last year.
All right, let's move to another show that you saw recently. This is a group show called Your Presence is Encouraged. Where is this? And what did you see there, Lindsay?
Yeah, so this show was in a private backyard. It was curated by the artist Isabel Yellen, and it was really cool. All the work was kind of installed outdoors throughout this yard, and it's a show of all female sculptors, including Yellen herself. And a lot of the work dealt with themes of domesticity, and it felt really palpable after being indoors all year. So Yellen's own sculpture in the exhibition almost looked like a jungle gym that was kind of draped with fabric sculptures, kind of loosely resembling bodies. There was a work by Amanda Ross Ho that's based off a childhood memory she had of her family turning a sandbox into a strawberry patch, and she kind of made a sculpture based on that memory. So a lot of the work kind of dealt with these themes of, again, home, the body, and memory. And Yellen told me that, you know, these themes kind of started to take on a different meaning after the year that we've had.
I really miss my community, and I really believe all of our works have a very strong conversation together. So why not bring us together in a backyard and, you know, revive the energy that I think we'd all really been missing?
So this show was open for just a few Saturdays. It was by appointment only. It's no longer open, but Isabel is organizing a part two in June at the gallery Various Small Fires in Hollywood that will be open to the public and include some additional artists there. So I'm really excited to see how this show transition into a gallery environment.
Quickly, before we let you go, Lindsay, I mean, are we going to see more of these pop-ups, these artist-run exhibitions going forward?
You know, I think if these two shows are any indication, I do think we're going to see more this year, more experimental, artist-run kind of pop-up exhibitions as we kind of enter back into public space and it's safe to gather again and bring community together. This format isn't new, you know, artist-run spaces, backyard shows, garage shows, that's always been a really big part of the LA art culture. But I do think, you know, they will have an extra urgency in the next year or two as we all kind of come back out into the world.
Lindsay Preston Zapp is founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Finally, before you leave us today, we're going to end the show with the story of one local family. We've been sharing, as you remember, lots of stories of people who recently got vaccinated, fully vaccinated, and the way it's allowed them to get back to some semblance of normalcy. A trip to the zoo with their daughter, that was a memorable one. A snuggle with their grandkids, a drink at their favorite dive bar. Well, today, a family of four slowly returning to a beloved weekly routine.
My name is Lisa Gray, and I live in Santa Monica, California. I was vaccinated at the end of January. My husband is a test flight instructor for the Air Force, and that's not a job you can do remotely. So the Air Force offered him the vaccine and any of his cohabitants, that would be me. And we jumped at the first opportunity. I have two adult kids. One lives in Redondo and one lives in Van Nuys. They have their own homes. They have their own jobs. But we get together every Sunday for dinner, which, of course, stopped when everything shut down. So I'm excited that I can finally start having Sunday dinner with my husband and kids again. Hey, William. Welcome. Since the pandemic began, we've been doing our weekly Sunday dinners virtually over a platform called Discord. Once the CDC said fully vaccinated people could gather with one other household, we switched up the routine and they started alternating weekends. Alex came first and William joined dinner over Discord. And we've alternated weekends ever since.
There she is. Do you want to hear what Dad made, or what make you feel bad?
I mean, it looks like bison burgers.
Close.
Lamb burgers?
Lamb.
I made a mushroom cream sauce to go on them, and then a new way to cook Brussels sprouts that's super yummy.
Oh, interesting. It looks like you sliced them up.
Mm-hmm.
He did, and there's bacon in there, so, you know, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
We've always gotten along as a family, the four of us, and enjoyed spending time together. The pandemic hasn't been so bad for my husband and I, but neither child is married, and my daughter actually lives alone.
So how's work this week? Anything interesting?
I was in the office 3 times this week.
Oh, that's like, a lot.
This week I had a meeting on Tuesday, then I had a tour on Thursday, and then I have a follow-up meeting on Friday at 4:30 from the Tuesday meeting.
Yeah, so when did you get your shot, and how did it go?
So I got mine on the 10th. I'm 1 week away now. So I got my first one on the 10th. My second one's on the 1st. And it actually went pretty smoothly.
Good. So you went to the same place, yeah. William?
No, I went to a place in Balboa. It's like a park with a big gym.
Yeah.
And they've covered up the gym floor with basically cardboard so people can walk on in the normal shoes. And they use it to vaccinate people.
So you got an appointment?
Yeah.
I got
it on the 15th.
Did your arm hurt?
A little bit, but it was the next day, the headache and nausea was the bad part.
Oh, I still worked through it,
but, you know.
You actually had some symptoms.
Yeah.
It's good. It's working.
Yep. Yeah. That means it's doing its thing.
I mean, coronavirus has been around forever, but this is the first one that's been kind of really nasty.
Yeah.
So.
One that was the right mix of lethality and transmissibility,
yep,
to really spread, because I think others were more lethal, but didn't spread.
So have you made your hair appointment?
I have, actually.
Oh, good.
My hair appointment is set for, I think it's like the last weekend in May, the 29th.
Nice.
So also, are you in your... totally cool doing the week after Mother's Day. Like, we can theme it Mother's Day if that helps, but, like, just for my own personal vanity.
Yeah.
And just trying to be good with CDC stuff and everything. I just would rather be...
Send her text saying happy Mother's Day on Mother's Day. That way that she'll know you remembered her on Mother's Day. And then we'll do the Mother's Day things we'll call it the best
better Mother's Day.
Belated Mother's Day ever.
Are we going to do all the things we didn't over Christmas? Are we going to watch Lord of the Rings?
Oh, my God. I think William's head would explode.
Bill?
Yeah?
Come say goodnight to your daughter.
Goodnight, Alex. I love you.
Hi, Dad. I love you, too.
Goodnight, Alex. Sleep well.
Goodnight, William. I love you.
Okay. I love you.
Okay. Love
goodnight.
You.
Goodnight. See you in a couple weeks.
Yes.
Love you.
Love you too, Mom.
Drive
safe.
I will.
Bye, Dad. There's nothing like a hug from your kid to just make the world right and to know that they're really okay.
That was Lisa Gray from Santa Monica talking about returning to their Sunday suppers in person with her husband Bill and their two grown kids, Alex and William. Thanks to Lisa for sending those clips, by the way. And thanks to producer Catherine Barnes for putting it all together. Fingers crossed that things are starting to get a little bit back to normal. So that's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, students have been migrating back to the classroom after a pandemic rendered them to laptops and tablets at home. It's much safer outside for class, but that's not always easy for some schools. That's tomorrow on another episode of Greater LA. A reminder, we have live coverage of President Joe Biden's speech before a joint session of Congress tonight. That's yours starting at 6 Pacific time this evening. Join us at our website, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Tell us how you're doing. And while you're there, subscribe to the podcast and get every episode of GLA, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Desmond Taylor, Mike Stark, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Tom, Mario Saavedra, Christine Comito, and Christian Bordahl all made today's show happen. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and attention. Have yourself a great Wednesday.